number is 221-5864. New West Medical, living, breathing solutions. KKRN thanks New West Medical for their support.
Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
Plato said that the unexamined life is not worth living. So, on the first and third Monday of each month, we examine aspects of life and human nature.
And tonight we're going to examine voting. Why we vote or why we don't vote.
And how we vote and how we get our information.
There's been a lot of studies in the last decade or so about voting, and there are psychologists who believe it's an expression of self-concept, or who I am is why we vote. Often we're influenced by our peers or people at our workplace, and we want to fit in, so we wind up voting the way they vote, or at least we're compelled that we should vote because of the, you know, influence.
Do we want you to think of some of the things we want you to think about tonight is when you vote, if you vote, which hopefully you do, do you actually research things or do you just listen to maybe what friends tell you? Do you listen to what a news program or a political pundit tells you, or do you do your homework? We have the internet now. And unless you're just too lazy with your time, you can become an expert on almost any subject that exists in life today. So, again, do you do the research or do you just take the lazy route, watch the 6 o'clock news, and vote based on what you heard?
We're going to talk a little bit about why we don't vote, but first I'd like to talk about the 2012 elections and who did vote. 65% of the eligible voters voted. That was 131 million people. And that's 10% down from in 1948. So that means fewer and fewer of us who are eligible to vote actually vote.
And why is that? I mean, why are people not voting?
Well, they say 72% of females vote, but only 69% of males vote. Why don't you guys out there vote?
I do. So I'm not sure I know. I think personally, I'm going to be a little harsh tonight, but I think there's laziness. We seem to have this belief that we live in an invincible country and that everything's always going to be fine and that our vote isn't needed. I don't know. I think people are spending time watching mindless things or, you know, surfing on the internet or playing pool in the local bar. They just don't want to spend the time.
They've talked to a number of people, and this is psychological studies, that vote or don't vote, and they feel, or they've labeled, those that don't vote that are self-consumed, might even be narcissistic, which is interesting when you think about voting as, I never thought of it as an ego thing.
Well, narcissistic is really all about ego. You're just into yourself and what makes you feel good. And that goes back to what I was saying. I think people are really, they're just not bothering. They're, you know, the idea is, and this is being promoted by a lot of political people, is that you the most important thing in life is that you have a job, you go to your job, you come home, you have leisure time, you have food on the table, you go back to your job the next day. I believe life is more meaningful than that. And back when people were voting more, their lives were a little tougher. And so things made a difference to them. I think we don't have enough conflict in our lives right now. And so people just don't bother. I mean, talk to people about what they're doing. They're watching television. They're going to sporting events. They're not taking the time.
Interestingly, those that don't vote, some of their excuses, 17%, and these are people that they've polled, 17% say they're too busy to vote.
And the question is, what are they busy doing? No, and you'd be surprised at what people consider to be busy.
But it takes such a small amount of your time. I mean, most of the polling places are on your way to work or on your, you know, way to taking the kids to school. They're usually close to your home. And you always can do absentee ballot if you don't want to bother, or you don't want to go on that day, or you're going to be out of town, or you're going to have surgery. You can always get an absentee ballot.
Well, you know, I think it's down on their priority list, which would take us partway to our discussion on do people think their vote even matters? And if they don't, why not?
Statistically, the people are saying 13% of them say they're not even interested in voting. To me, that comes back to that self-interest. I'm narcissistic and I can't be bothered. I'm not interested in what the rest of the world's doing, even though the rest of the country is providing me the wonderful life that I have that I can be self-absorbed in.
I have to agree with that. I know there are groups out there, some religious groups and other types of group as well, who have actively chosen not to participate in American politics. They say that they don't want to vote because they don't want to become part of this. And to those people, I say that if you're ever being robbed, you should not call the police, because the police are part of the system that we vote for maintaining this system and how we want it to be structured. Any services that have to do with you being safe, you should not participate in if you don't believe you should vote.
Well, going back to the statistics, 13% of people didn't like the choices. And to me, you not voting is a choice. It's like not making a decision is a decision. It's a default. It's like saying, okay, I don't like those choices, so give me another. You have to speak up if you want another choice.
And in some cases, you can write in your own choice. In some cases, you can't. And I don't know all the rules and regulations about balloting, but there are sometimes items that I just don't vote on, but that doesn't mean I don't go and vote. If I'm not knowledgeable about something, that's my fault, but I probably shouldn't be voting on it. And, you know, if you think a law is wrong, you definitely should be out there voting. I hear a lot of people complaining, but I don't see a lot of people voting.
And if you don't vote, I don't think you have the right to whine, because no. That is your self-expression. That is your voice, so that the government can hear it. Even though it might be drowned out by someone's louder voice, it is still part of the crowd.
That's right. You know, I'm of the mind these days to vote for people that probably don't have a chance of getting elected. But when I don't vote, then no one knows that that candidate has even one vote. So every vote counts. You know, everyone can see the percentages of who gets elected. And if a person's 0%, then the person that you think had the best ideas ends up showing up with no votes. And so you should vote, even if you don't think that person has a chance of winning the election, to show that they have support and people that care. And then other people in the future may vote that way because they saw it wasn't a zero vote.
Not only that, but if you see the government as problematic, you don't like what your legislators are doing, state or federal level, even your local county people, if you don't like what they're doing, your vote tells them that. Even if it's for the minority candidate, the third party you might call candidate, or the independent, you're considered an independent voter if you don't vote Democrat or Republican. But nonetheless, that is a voice, and it sends a message. If that guy's running, wins by a landslide, he thinks he can do anything. If he only wins by a small margin, then he's got to answer to at least half the people.
And it's important that the message get out that another candidate has people that follow him, as Pat just said. And so we have to reiterate, your vote is very important, no matter whether your candidate wins or not, or if the bill that you think needs to be created passes or not. The fact that it had a certain percentage of votes keeps it on the map for the next time. There are a lot of college kids I meet out there who want to think they're libertarians. But they're voting libertarian because libertarians want to get out of all the wars. They don't, when you ask them if they understand that, you know, libertarians also want you to pay your own way and not be able to write off your college debts, then they didn't realize that maybe they're not as libertarian as they thought they were.
And going back to that, I want to vote for them because they don't believe in war, is my self-interest, because I don't want to go to war.
Exactly. Yeah, in a lot of cases, that's true.
And you don't have to vote for every candidate on the ballot. You can skip over boxes. If you don't know anything about the two candidates that are running for the school district because you don't have kids in school or whatever, your maybe disabled and you're not affected by that, it's okay. You don't have to vote for that one particular box. You can go on to the next one.
And vote about the things that you think are important. You know, if you believe that people should be given a living wage forever without any strings attached, then vote that way. If you believe the opposite of that, vote that way. If you believe in freedom, vote for the kinds of bills and candidates that you think promote freedom. But we're all in this together, and your vote matters. Everyone's vote matters. But I think a lot of people, as Pat said, are really self-centered, and they tell themselves their vote doesn't matter so that they don't have to take the little effort that it is to go vote or to register to vote.
It's an excuse. It's their excuse for not participating. And if you're not participating, you're part of the problem because you're not part of the solution by voting. That's our only solution. And I know there are a lot of political pundits out there that say your vote doesn't matter unless you vote for a Republican or a Democrat. And there are a lot of people out there that vote by party. They vote by habit because they always vote this way. And they're fine. But if you're not of that persuasion, then it's your job to go out and vote the opposite or for the other third person that's running. Whatever it is, you need to support the idea that you have a voice and only you can exercise that voice.
Only you. And it's sometimes hard to get your mind around the fact that it's only one, you know, I just have one vote. How can that possibly make a difference? But in fact, you know, a bottle full of high pressure oxygen is a bunch of individual molecules bouncing around. And without all of those molecules being there, you wouldn't have a container of high pressure gas. So every single little vote does matter, but it has to be made. If enough people believe that a single vote doesn't matter and don't vote, then there are no votes.
Kevin Lanning, who has a PhD at Florida University down there somewhere, says that America is a great country. And we're great because people from so many different backgrounds can and do participate. That greatness is at risk when significant groups in significant numbers don't participate as they could. This goes back to you should participate. You need to participate in order to help along the solution to whatever the problem is that our country is facing.
We all need your vote, even if you think you're if you really think you're ignorant of the issues, then you need to take the time. I don't buy the idea that people are too busy. You know, I know people who have extremely busy business lives. They're always on the make, working constantly towards business, and yet they find the time to go vote. It's a matter of considering things important. You know, if you are someone who needs to exercise and doesn't do it, you manage to brush your teeth every day. You manage to do the other things you want to do. The sheer popularity of all of the TV programs that people watch, Dancing with the Stars and America's
Idol.
Yeah. All of those tell me that people do have spare time. They're just not willing to give it up.
And it's easy to vote absentee ballot. And not voting is a no vote for any candidate. And it proves to politicians the theory that the public is apathetic and can be moldable into whatever spin they're putting on their latest marketing. And they say, okay, they're listening to what we're slick marketing is saying. They're not voting. They're apathetic. I can do what I want.
And, you know, the people who they want to vote the way they want them to vote, they'll go out and get them in buses and take them out and make them vote. And the people that really matter, the people who will go out on their own and make a decision, are the ones not voting. And so these people who will do anything someone tells them to do are the ones winning the vote. And do you think that that is the way the country should be run? Do you think those develop the principles that we need?
Not only that, they statistically know that if you don't vote, there is a high likelihood your children will not vote. So you're a role model for the system, the of our government. If your children see the apathy that you portray for or contempt for the government and do nothing to help solve the problem, they're going to take on that same attitude.
And getting back to you know why and how you vote, do you you need to ask yourself the question on how you get your information. Do you go out and talk to people about politics? I know people say, well, you got to be careful talking about business, politics, religion, but you need to go out and talk to people about issues that matter. I have people that I meet every day who aren't even aware of the Ebola problem. Or you watch these programs where a reporter goes on the street and asks people who they voted for, and the people tell them, and then they show them a picture of who they voted for, and they don't know who it is.
I know, and that is, there's no excuse for that. And a lot of people say, well, our education system is not educating kids on politics and the structure of government being, you know, executive, judicial, and legislative branches. But again, it goes back to you have an obligation if you're going to talk about at all about the government, or you dislike something or you like something, then you have an obligation to get informed and vote. And we take for granted an awful lot in this country.
And getting informed is so important. When you, I asked early in the program for you to think about how you get your information. Do you just sit and watch the half-hour evening news and everything you believe is based on what you hear there? If you are part of a discussion group, do you go to discussion groups where people agree totally with everything that you believe? I don't. I go to places where their politics are the opposite of mine, or even sometimes professional sites I've been to that are involved in my profession, and people will bring up a subject about the Affordable Care Act or something else related to the health fields that I'm in, and I'll start arguing with them. And sometimes they'll say, you know, this is a website about this subject, not about politics. And say, well, politics is affecting us, so I think you need to talk about it. That may rub people the wrong way, but you need to go to places where people don't agree with you, because those are the ones you need to convince to join you, not the ones that already are kumbaya.
And family discussion on politics is wonderful for your children. Even though they made, we had political discussions around our table, and we had people that were friends of the family that traveled in foreign countries, and they would come back and discuss the political system that they were trying to work in or live in or whatever. And it was very educational for our children. But our children are at opposite viewpoints today. They both vote. They both, one's mostly, you know,
one's liberal and one's conservative?
Yes, very much so. And it's interesting, even when we have our discussions now at dinner table, it is respectful. We respectfully disagree, but we all voice our concerns and our frustrations.
And when you only discuss things with people that agree with you, I see that as a kind of an intellectual inbreeding, where the same ideas get kicked around and reinforced by these people. Instead of contrary ideas and people challenging what you say, and you taking the time to think about their challenge and let your ego rest a little bit and say, you know, they might be right. People, you hear people sometimes spouting the most ridiculous points of view because they've been a member of this party for 40 years. And after you've been a member of this gang for 40 years, you're not likely to want to let your ego suffer the consequences of saying, gee, maybe I was wrong.
And ask questions of other people who have a different viewpoint than your own, be it family or friends. When we do this all the time as adults with other things, we discuss schools and teachers and PTA as mothers, but we also need to talk about those issues. You talk to a number of mothers today, and they're all talking about Common Core.
Yeah, and they both have pro and con views on it, and you'll find that many times it's because of who they listen to, not because they've done their homework.
Exactly.
I had someone who disagreed with me on a policy about minimum wage a few weeks ago, and just because I disagreed, the question put to me was, well, then I suppose you don't believe in the Holocaust either. That's not discussion. That's I don't know what that is, but it's not intellectual.
It's not, you're comparing bananas and fruit trees.
Well, you're basically attacking the person just because they disagree with you. And people need to have rational discussions, but if you do what I'm asking you to do, there will be people that will get angry with you, and will want to put you down personally, make personal comments. But you can be oblivious to that and continue the discussion. I've done it many times, both in person and on web discussion groups. You need to challenge people. They may get upset. They may scream in their mother's basement or whatever it is they're doing. But possibly some of your thinking could get through them. And if you are right, then you've made a positive influence. If you're wrong, being right or wrong is a relative thing.
Well, not only that, but you need to think about it and formulate questions that are intellectual that will stimulate thinking on the other side, as well as you think about those intelligent questions that are asked of your opinion.
And we've already come on our 20-minute mark, so I think we're going to take a break here, and we will be back with you in just a few minutes. I hope you're enjoying our discussion tonight. This is Examine Life on KKRN 88.5 FM, Bella Vista in Round Mountain. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Making believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
Live. Oh, give me what you alone can give. I kiss the pill I dream on.
Okay, you're listening to Examine Life this evening on KKRN Bella Vista and in Round Mountain 88.5. And we're discussing voting this evening, and we're going to talk a little bit about the segments of society and voting. The millennials, which are the people born from 1980, and their age is about 18 to 33, they're born after 1980, and right now they make up 25% of the age-eligible voters. But they're registering in large numbers as libertarians or as some other independent type of voter.
And I think that's a good thing. Of course, being a libertarian myself, I would think it's a good thing. But I'm a little skeptical because I went a couple of years ago to Chico State and saw Ron Paul there. And the college students were just adoring of Ron Paul. And I talked to some of the people there, and almost the only thing I was hearing from everybody is Ron Paul wants to get us out of all these silly wars. And I started asking, are you aware that Ron Paul also wants you to pay your own way, doesn't want you to be able to write off your college bills? He wants to legalize all drugs, but he also wants to say, if you overdose, you're kind of on your own. I'm not going to pay to fix that. And then I was getting some confused looks. And so I think it's good that they want to be libertarian, that they like the concept. But that kind of concept also calls for personal responsibility. And again, you need to think about why you vote. Don't just listen to the one thing you hear that attracts you.
And the millennials that I have spoken to or even actually listened to on television talk about voting. And they're saying that they don't want government interfering in their lives. This age group historically has not really paid much attention to government because they were kind of in that building of their careers, going to school. But now they're realizing that the student loans are government loans. Those are not some lender that they talk to. These are all government loans. We used to call them Sally Mae loans. They also realize that the government is now coming to affect them with the Affordable Care Act, and they want less government because before they never even had to think about insurance. Now they can stay on mom and dad's till they're about 26, but after that, they're coming to the reality of health insurance, where, you know, when I was 26 years old, it was you got that through your job and never thought a thing of it.
I really think you're right about the focus. They were focused on beginning their lives, but I think again a lot of the millennials were, you know, they were getting those college loans. They are if they don't, you know, they have parents who sometimes are supporting them all the way through college. So it's like this kid that used to work for me thought he was a rebel because he rode a motorcycle and he pretty much did things the way he wanted. And then I found out he was still living with his parents. And I told him, you can't be a rebel until you're feeding yourself. Then if you do something that maybe is a little contrary, takes a little bit of guts because, you know, you got to work and you got to be responsible. And here you are doing this irresponsible thing and you might not eat from it. You're a rebel. But when you know, sometimes they think they're thinking independently. But how much have they depended on this government that they think is so intrusive now?
Well, most of the people that I've talked to, the age group that they are closer to probably 30, 30 to 33, 34, 35, where they have taken responsibility for their lives. But now they're really beginning to see that the government is intruding in these little edges of the circle of their lives that they never had to pay attention to before. And suddenly they're realizing, you know, I don't think I want the government interfering in all of these parts of my life. And that's the new. Previous generations never looked at the government as any kind of control or influence on their lives like it is now.
Well, and that's true. But I guess what I'm getting at is, let's say that you worked at a minimum wage job. Well, back in the early days when I worked at a minimum wage job, it was, I think, $2.20 an hour. But, you know, these people, if they've ever worked at a minimum wage job, well, they were supported by the government determining that they shouldn't be paid anything less than that. And that's what I'm getting at. They're talking now about being intrusive, but it really was intrusive back then to people that had to pay those minimum wages.
Well, they didn't see it as affecting them the way they do now. And part of that might be the result of 9/11. These kids became adults after 9/11, where we had Homeland Security and we had all of these travel type of, you know, when you go to the airport, it wasn't just get on the airplane anymore. So I think they've grown up as teenagers and young adults with, gee, the government does all of this. It's not my freedom of will anymore the way it used to be.
Well, and I agree. I hope they continue to think that way, of course, from my political perspective. And the question will be, do they vote Do they feel strongly enough about that that they will vote?
Well, by 2020, they'll make up 36% of eligible voters. And, of course, not all of them are going to vote, but that is a big chunk that politicians are going to have to pay attention to by 2020. I know that's 6 years away, but that's going to fly by when it comes elections.
It'll be interesting to see how that pans out and how it affects politicians, you know, how they will mold their message to get the votes they want without necessarily satisfying the voters that they're trying to get.
Yes, and demographics are actually very interesting. Of voters in the 2012 election, for example, ages 18 to 35, 62% of the eligible voters voted. That's astonishing. 35 to 55 age group, 68% of the eligible voters voted. And people over 55, 75% of them voted. And that's because their life is touched directly by Social Security and Medicare. This affects their health and their money. And I think that's why they vote more than any other age group.
And but even that goes back to, you were talking before about being self-centered. And it's a little bit sad to see that an age group votes so much because they want to have benefits rather than voting for what's good for the country. You know, John Kennedy, ask not what your country can do for you, et cetera. But sadly, that's how people vote. And so what a politician does is try to formulate his message, I'm going to do this for you.
Exactly. And think about the baby boomers who are going to be becoming more and more a part of that big segment of seniors. And who is more self-interested than baby boomers?
That's well,
is it going to get any better?
We won't go there. Certainly, I'm not self-interested.
But interestingly enough, working seniors that are not retired, they're still in the job, they know our history and they see more of their civil rights being eroded, their property rights, their rights to privacy. That's why a lot of them don't want to get involved in the internet or go to an ATM, is because they feel like it's a loss of privacy. And this might work to the benefit of society and having this small segment of people saying, I don't think I need all that technology in my life.
It's true. It's interesting when you talk about that. We talked about the millennials believing that the government's being too intrusive on their privacy. And yet they're all out there, you know, putting all the information they can on the internet. You know, they tell people when they're going to the bathroom, you know, when they just went to the grocery store, went through the drive-through. I mean, it's amazing the information. And they put photos and private information on their Facebook, and then they complain the government's too intrusive with their private information.
And they don't realize that there are predators out there stalking you or your family on Facebook. They are oblivious to that. Where seniors, on the other hand, are totally conscious of protecting their information. They're afraid of... I heard an interesting analogy. And that was, when you get email and you post on Facebook, it's like someone knocking on your door and you swing the door open and say, come on in. A senior won't do that. They'll look out the window, they'll peek, pull the curtain back, see who's out there before they open that door. And when they do open it, they don't swing it wide and say, come on in.
You know, what's fascinating is the dichotomy of seniors, because my wife has worked with elderly couples. And what I found, there's one that she worked with a few years ago that a fellow came to them and told them they had a problem with their roof and that it needed to be fixed. And it was going to charge them, I think, $5,000 or $7,000, something to fix it. And she was doing in-home care for them. But she always goes a little further with that. She becomes a relative taking care of their interests. And so she found out that the guy had charged them all this money. And not only did the problem not exist, but the thing that he pointed to, he didn't even do anything up there. And she got involved, and he was actually caught and I think put in jail somewhere in Oregon. The point being that this couple was very trusting. And so I agree with what you're saying, except there's two parts to it. They're suspicious of this new society, but inherently they're used to a day when you did trust people. And so in many cases, like you said, they don't trust their information being out there, but they'll let that guy walk to the door and tell him his story and believe him because, well, he must be honorable.
Because they did business with a handshake as young people.
And I love that generation. They call it the greatest generation for a reason. You know, one of my favorite TV news spots was during the whole sequester thing and all the national parks had to be shut down. And there was a national park for Normandy in France. And the old veterans went there. They traveled all the way to France to see this place where they came ashore in World War II. And they were told by the government watch person that it was closed. And one of the veterans told him, well, it was closed the first time we got here. And then he walked in.
Isn't that sweet?
I love those guys.
Yes. I want to touch a little bit on our two-party system versus the possibility of a three-party system. We originally started out, George Washington was a Federalist. He considered himself a Federalist. And they were pretty much very fiscally responsible, and John Adams was a part of all of that.
And they believed that the states should hold the power.
And that was in the late 1700s. And then Thomas Jefferson came along, and he was a Democrat, and he did not like that structure. And so he promoted the Democratic Party. And along with that, we had some opposition to that Democratic Party as the 1800s rolled in about 1830. The Whig Party came along to oppose the Democratic Party. And they believed that the legislative branch should have more power than the executive branch. And they believed in economic protectionism, where we didn't do any foreign trade and we didn't let foreigners influence us monetarily. And that party, the Whig Party and the Democrats, fought for about 20 years until we got close to the Civil War. And the Civil War brought about the demise of the Whig Party, and that's when the Republican Party was born. So the party has changed. It wouldn't be the first time there was a new party evolve. And right now we classify anybody who doesn't vote Republican or Democrat as an independent voter. But there are a lot of those segments now that independent voters have choices.
And I think what all that should tell you is that, you know, you sometimes think your vote is wasted if you vote for the Libertarian or the Independent Party member or some other third party. But possibilities always exist. And the way things like this happen is because a few people believe and they go out and convince a few other people. So your responsibility is not just to vote. Your responsibility is to go out and convince other people. And I was saying earlier about joining discussion groups that believe the opposite of what you believe. That's how you change minds. So we're talking about votes tonight, but the responsibility is larger than that.
And I think the information that's available on the internet is changing the two-party system also. A lot of people for decades voted party because that's the only way they knew how to vote. But now we have information available about other candidates, other parties, that we can make more intelligent decisions. We don't have to only pick Democrats or Republicans.
The information is all there. I'm amazed every day when you can pick any subject and you can find a million pieces of information about it. You can go to Wikipedia. That's not just some organization that is constantly massaged by new experts. So it's one of the greatest information sources because someone will say something on there about a subject and someone else will come along and say, well, no, it wasn't exactly that way, and amend the page. And so it's like it all kind of distills down to, I guess, the truth.
And a third party vote is not a wasted vote. I want to quote Judge Napolitano and his discussion about third-party voting. And he calls it about just an independent voter, not necessarily a libertarian or anything else. But he said, a third-party vote is a small step toward a free market and away from centralized economic planning, and it's a small improvement for American freedom. And you think about a journey of 1,000 miles starts with that first step. And the same is true with voting independent. feel free to do that. There is no longer an obligation to any party that you need to vote for that candidate because he is representative of that party. The parties are so muted now, and I think all of us are frustrated with the inability of our legislations to get anything done.
I think the parties are just too old and too mature. A lot of people who are devout atheists today are that way because in their early days, the whole church thing was just too overbearing and had become so self-righteous that it was impossible to live with comfortably. But instead of reacting in a rational way, there's people out there now that hate all religion, and they're just being the same thing their parents were, just the opposite.
Yes.
And so the political parties are the same way. They're big machines that are feeding themselves, and it's time for that to change, but only you can do that with your votes. You have to care, and you have to believe that you can form that third party, or you can enliven it or strengthen it and make it happen, make it something of consequence.
One thought, elections are just one small part of how social justice change can happen. And this happened in the 70s with the civil rights and the rights of women. All of this started with those small groups of college students. It wasn't something the Democrats or Republicans put forth. This was the small steps that society made happen.
How many blacks in the 1950s believed that they would ever have equal rights with anyone? I'll bet most of them felt that it was an unbeatable battle, that they would never be able to live the way they deserve to.
And ironically, after the Civil War, the North were considered Republicans and the South were considered Democrats. And it was President Kennedy that really pushed through civil rights, and he was a Democrat.
And he asked the question, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. We get back to the votes and who votes and why. I think people need to try to think more about what do they want for the country? Because in the end, if the country thrives in the right ways, all the people will thrive as well in one fashion or another.
And I want to remind everybody before we forget that you need to register to vote no later than October 20th to vote in this year's election. You can do that online. You can do that through the DMV. There's no excuse. You still have 2 more weeks to register to vote. And with that, we'll take a little break and be right back with you.
And we'll be right back with you.
I want to bring up.
You're listening to KKRN 88.5 FM, Bella Vista in Round Mountain. This is Examine Life. I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
We're going to get a little bit political on you now. This is coming close to the end of our show.
The centralized government at the federal level allows power, money, and influence by lobbyists, special interest, and corporate America a whole lot easier. If we had legislators, especially in the state assemblies and legislatures, that would push back on federal government and their, this is the condition of getting federal funds that we constantly buy into. If we got states to stand up to the federal government, think about how that would impact the dollars and power and influence of lobbyists.
That's right. Pat had made the point to me earlier off the air that a good thing to think about is that lobbyist or that company who employs or that group who employs a lobbyist would have to approach 50 governments and not just one centralized government to get what they want.
They couldn't just go to Washington, D.C. and influence the small group of politicians that are all captured there. They would have to go to 50 states, to all of the senators and legislators of all of those states, in order to throw around their money, their influence, their power, which would be far less than they do now with the centralized government of everybody meets in Washington, they all do their thing, and they all throw around their weight.
And what we're talking about here is Federalists. Federalists believe that the state should have the power, not the central federal government, just for a little bit of definition.
And the impact of elections is political. Voting or not, it has a political impact on us. And you think about the initiatives. California has the right to have initiatives on our ballots. By the way, many, many states do not have that. California is a little unique in that. But unfortunately, a lot of those initiatives are written by special interest groups. They're not written by our politicians. They're written by attorneys or lobbyists that have a special interest that they want some part of the law gives them a privilege.
And so you as a discerning voter needs to see through all of that, and that's why you need to do your homework. You need to understand the issues. And when you see a ballot issue that says, we want cleaner air, be immediately suspicious.
Yes.
And find out what are they talking about. You know, if 50 years ago, 40 years ago, whenever it was, if California would have said all vehicles have to have an emission at this level by the year 2000 and left it alone, there would have sprung up 1,000 industries, billions of dollars of income and tax money, finding ways to make automobiles cleaner. Instead, they said, oh, by the way, you have to do it with this catalytic converter that somebody's nephew invented.
Exactly. And this goes right down to our local level. There are initiatives on our ballot this year that we'll talk about later next month that are affecting us here locally, our county right here in Shasta County. But most of our initiatives are statewide. And so when those are written, 99% of the time, it's by a special interest, and they are marketing and they're putting a spin on that ad. Now they have to declare who is actually paying for that ad. Listen for that information at the end of that ad, or read it at the bottom of the screen on the television, that you know who is pushing forth this information. Because oftentimes it's the slick marketing that gets an initiative passed. Who has the most money to spend, rather than what's in our best interest?
And use your logical mind and think about the consequences. Once you've understood an issue, try to think about the consequences, because this is what politicians don't do. You know, if you want to outlaw plastic bags from markets, think about the unintended consequences that Pat brought up to me earlier about the idea that we're having problems now with all these fabric bags becoming infected with all kinds of germs, because some people by their nature don't bother to clean things. And so now we're having an issue related to having plastic bags that were already banned in a local area in California, in the Bay Area. So when you see an issue, first of all, do your homework, but then use your brain and think about some of the consequences, positive and negative, that could happen. And sometimes you may decide that something you were for doesn't sound so good after all.
And a lot of times a politician will put forth an amendment to our Constitution or a law they want passed, and it doesn't get passed, and they bring it to us as an initiative. And sometimes that is a good idea. Prop 13, I think, was originally came to us as a good thing, and the politicians got together and promoted the Prop 13, which allows our property taxes to stay the same as long as we stay in our homes. And this was probably a good thing, but that's not always the case. Unfortunately, our politicians are bought and sold by the highest bidder oftentimes, and these include lobbyists, corporate America, and I hate to mention it as it's a parliament of horrors, but it has. And if you ever want to read a funny book that is a satire on politicians, Peter O'Rourke has a book that he wrote 20 years ago called The Parliament of Horrors. And it talks about our political system and how it gets eroded by influence.
And don't have your voting be decided by catchphrases and, people saying the same thing over and over again. Like Pat just mentioned the lobbyists and how they come from corporations and they try to buy politicians. Well, you have to think of both sides of this when you think, oh, well, the government can fix everything. Well, those politicians had to be viable. So, and they have positions of power. The company just has its financial power. Those politicians have positions of power and influence and some of them security clearances, and they were bought by a politician. You have to think of both sides of an argument before you take a side.
And oftentimes this marketing is targeted. Research shows that people that vote out of an obligation that they feel that they should vote or altruism reasons to vote, they are the ones most easily influenced by signs and campaign slogans and the political ads that are on television. Don't let yourself be one of those that is obligated, you feel obligated to vote, and you just vote based on that 30-second ad on television. Read that pamphlet you get in the mail that talks about the initiatives. Even gives you some candidate statements. But the initiatives at least gives you the pro and con and the rebuttal to that pro and con argument. And at the bottom of that, it will even tell you what organization is sponsoring the arguments. So you can see, okay, this is a special interest group. This is a very thin margin of people that represent our population. And do I really want to succumb to their sales pitch?
And challenge yourself a little bit. You know, if it makes your ego feel good, tell yourself that you're not a sheep. And if you see an argument for a ballot measure or see a candidate that says things that make you feel good, immediately check yourself and ask yourself, am I just taking the easy route here by agreeing with this, or am I going to do my homework and really understand and maybe change my own mind and feel like I made a bad decision before?
And don't buy into the argument that this is necessary to fix something. That is or it's national security that we need to do this. Oftentimes, this is just a label they put on something because they know you're listening to hear that.
And they know that if they say something strong enough, like you need to help that person or you need to protect our country, that you want to feel good about yourself, so you'll just agree with them so you can feel good about yourself. But as far as I'm concerned, that's being lazy.
And in that pamphlet that you get, the voter's pamphlet, there's also a monetary impact of initiatives that is discussed briefly at the end of those arguments. And it's not always accurate. Think outside the box about the unintended consequences of something. We don't always think through, and oftentimes these statistics are done by some bureaucracy, and they're not thinking outside the box of unintended consequences either. So again, why do you elect a specific candidate? Do you know that candidate? Have you heard him speak? Have you listened to the debates?
Or her.
Or her, yes, or her. Take the time to listen to the debate on television. I know sometimes people go, oh, I just can't stand politicians. I don't want to listen to that. Force yourself. It will give you an insight to the way they think. And just because they're a lousy speaker doesn't mean they're a lousy person.
I hope that you can send us some email, too, about your opinions at examinelife@kkrn.org. We would like to hear some opinions. We don't know at this point who's listening out there, but we'd like to know what your thoughts are. You know, I'm a libertarian. A libertarian's motto is don't hurt people and don't take their stuff. And I have a new idea for a tax I'd like to hear some opinions on, and I hate taxes. And that is, for every legal document that's drawn up, the person who writes it and the person who uses it should have to pay a tax based on the number and size of the words in the document.
Another thing that you might want to email us about is that on our next show, we are going to have Mark Baird back again, who is the representative speaker for the state of Jefferson. And we'd like you to email us your questions, your reservations, or your belief in how or why this might not work, because we want to get the information out to the public about this is a monumental decision, creating a new state. It needs everyone's time and attention to really think about it seriously. This is a historic process.
And if you think it's impossible, look how close Scotland came.
Yes, and that's not even in the United States.
And speaking of lazy, how many people knew about that?
Yes, or know about the state of Jefferson, or know about any of the other initiatives or candidates and what their stand is on something. Oftentimes, we only look at something that's important to us as to their maybe gun control is a hot topic right now, and you're going to vote for a candidate that is pro-gun or anti-gun. Think outside the box a little bit of what else does this candidate stand for, and not make a decision based on just one segment of his ideas.
If you think a third party is impossible, or anything, frankly, is impossible to do, think about our Revolutionary War, when after the first year, these people who were individuals taking on the largest and most powerful military on the planet had lost every battle they had fought for the first year, had no food, a lot of times no shoes. They couldn't, FaceTime back to their family at home, and yet they continued fighting. Just think about that for a little bit. When you think things are impossible, try to put yourself in the mindset that they had. They weren't being murdered in mass. It was about taxes, mostly, and about overbearance of the royalty on their lives. And yet they did this incredible feat, and because they did it, it happened.
And it took years for that to happen. Not only the war that covered years, but once the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were formed, it took another number of years for all of the states to ratify that and actually put it in place. So everything starts with those few steps, those beginning steps of voting, paying attention, and participating.
This has been Examine Life. We hope that we've made you think a little bit. We hope that all of you will go out and vote. And we hope that you'll think about what you're going to vote for, who you're going to vote for, and why you're voting. Are you voting for yourself or the betterment of your whole country or your community? And are you thinking it through?
And you still have 2 more weeks to register to vote. We encourage you to go out and register either at the DMV or online. You can just put register to vote in California, and there are 4 or 5 websites you can go to register.
I hope you'll email us, examinelife@kkrn.org. You're listening to kkrn.org, 88.5 FM, in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
This is Examine Life, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Programming on KKRN is supported in part by listeners like you and Mountain Valley's Health Centers, serving the Intermountain communities by providing primary care. Appointments can be made in Burney at 335 335- 5457 in Fall River at 336-6535 or in Big Valley at 294-5241. Medi-Cal, Medicare, and private insurance are all accepted. There is a sliding scale available. On the web, mountainmtnvalleyhc.org. Thanks, Mountain Valley, for supporting KKRN.
Programming on KKRN.